Penguin Random House Audio presents Savor, A Chef's Hunger for More by Fatima Ali with Tarajia Morel. Foreword by Farize Durrani. Read for you by Nikar Kishnani and Deepa Samuel.
But behold, as for those who attain to faith and do righteous deeds, verily, we do not fail to requite any who preserve in doing good. There shall be gardens of perpetual bliss, through which running waters flow, wherein they will be adorned with bracelets of gold and will wear green garments of silk and brocade, and wherein upon couches they will recline. How excellent a recompense, and how goodly a place to rest. The Quran, Surah 18:30-31. About This Book by Tarajia Morel. It was mid-October 2018 when I got the call. Are you familiar with Fatima Ali? My literary agent began after niceties. I am, I told her. I just read her second essay in Bon Appetit yesterday. Well, she wants to write a book about the time she has left, she explained. She needs a collaborator. Yes, I answered without a pause. Yes, I want to be considered. Please put me forward for it. I hadn't watched Fatima on Top Chef. I didn't know her personally and I'd never tasted her food, but I'd read her essays in Bon Appetit and, just like many, I admired her. In her first essay from May 2018, I'd recognized a hard-working, charismatic young woman on the cusp of coming into her own, of becoming, when cancer callously interrupted her. As she fought the vicious disease, I inwardly applauded Fatima's stalwart grit. After reading her second essay for the magazine, the day before my agent called, in which Fatima revealed that she was terminal, I was in awe of her pledge to live the rest of her abbreviated life to the fullest in the face of a literal death sentence. Her vow to accomplish her bucket list against all odds in the year that she was given to live. If I could, I wanted to help this ambitious, spirited young woman to go out fighting. I submitted some writing samples and embarked on a long-planned trip. While I was gone, Fatima was a guest on Ellen DeGeneres' TV show. I watched on my laptop, a pale Fatima, on crutches but poised, conceding her diagnosis, but not letting it curtail her plans. She was determined to make her last year count, to travel the world, to eat at her dream restaurants, to go on safari. Her humor and cheekiness were contagious as she gracefully, wittily volleyed back to Ellen, the professional prankster. Fatima impressed me anew. Our appreciation must have been mutual, because our agents facilitated a conversation. Over Skype, she and her brother, Mohammed, reiterated the proposition to write a bucket list book based on her dream travel and meals. I encouraged her to journal, to write down anything, words, fragments, memories, recipes, smells, lists, whatever felt too important to forget. And I offered a few memoir suggestions for her to read while they sorted out the specifics. Mohammed and I mostly glossed over the details of where and when the project might begin. Other than that, they hoped to start on it as soon as possible, and we said our goodbyes. In late November, I learned that Fatima had chosen me as her collaborator. The plan was for me to record the reflections of an intrepid young woman living as best she could for what would be the last year of her life. I'd write down what she saw, heard, tasted, and felt so that she could simply be in the moment for the moments she had left. She mentioned wanting to go to Noma in Copenhagen, Chef René Redzepi's nature-driven temple of new Nordic gastronomy, and Osteria Francescana, Chef Massimo Bottura's storied jewel in Modena, Italy, which I longed to visit as well. What, I asked myself, will I see with this stranger? What might I learn from this impermanent life force? I returned home to New York and awaited my marching orders, but a week passed, then two, and none came. Several days before Christmas, Muhammad called from Los Angeles and explained. Fatima's condition had deteriorated rapidly, and she was in constant, harrowing agony. She was about to undergo a procedure that would help her better manage the pain, and he wanted to give her a few days to recuperate before we began our work together. We decided I should join them right after the holidays. The parameters were rapidly changing. I flew to Los Angeles on January 3rd, 2019, concerned and nervous, feeling ill-equipped for whatever lay ahead. I'd never written a book before. I'd never written a book with a dying woman. Already, this hardly resembled the poignant but delectable voyaging that I'd signed up for. How could we make Fatima's book come to life from a hospital room in Santa Monica? Upon my arrival, I was met by a hollow-eyed family with faces worn down by preemptive grief, still playing at being strong for the woman in room 435 of UCLA Medical Center's cancer ward. My initial conversation there with Muhammad left me with a series of questions. What was I doing there? How could I best serve this woman I'd never met, her family, and my assignment, the framework of which shifted hourly? The promised year from her terminal diagnosis had been cruelly pruned to 4 pain-filled months. Muhammad admitted that unless something changed drastically, Fatima didn't have long. I'll confess that I considered excusing myself. What can we achieve together, I wondered, under these tortured circumstances? And with so little time left, why does she want to spend it with a stranger? You'll see lots of people here with us, Muhammad explained, as if reading my thoughts. Fatih's friends, my mom's friends, our family. I don't want you to worry. I've explained to them why you're here, and they understand that you're doing this for Fatih. I don't want to intrude, I told him. At any time, someone can just ask me to step out or away. Yes, that's right. But for now, this is what Fatih wants to focus on. She wants to work with you. And the rest, we just check in with her and follow how she's doing. She fades off sometimes, but she's there. She's still really there. So I stayed. I decided to give this young woman, whom I'd never met before, all I could for the week I'd committed to spending with her, whether a book came out of it or not. What would it cost me to keep this initial commitment to a dying woman? How often in life is simply showing up of such value to a stranger? If life and control were being torn from me, how much would I appreciate those who kept their word? I followed Muhammad into Fatima's hospital room. She was propped up in bed, wearing glasses, head shaven with thick black hair starting to grow in. Her 29-year-old face was symmetrical and void of makeup or wrinkles. Her dark eyes were haloed in black lashes. She was all the lovelier for her lack of ornamentation, but I sensed a sallowness had snuck into cheeks that were meant to be a richer hue of toffee. I reached for her hand in greeting, and she didn't draw back, but serenely said, "Not a lot of touching." And my worried, withdrawn hands quickly found each other, as if in prayer. Though I knew she was unwell, my first impression was that she exuded a sort of regality, as if it was not her infirmity, but her distinction that made us orbit around her quiet, reclining frame. We three were together for the first time then, in the same positions we'd inhabit in every session over our 1 week together. Fatima in her bed, me on her right side by her ankles, Muhammad by her left hip. And then, so near the end, we began. I asked questions. She spoke slowly. I listened. I recorded. Sometimes her faithful brother pressed her further for a hard answer, trying to stave off the inevitable sleepless nights and cravings for more clarity that stay with us when we lose those we love. After that first day, I left Fatima's room feeling exhilarated by her storytelling, but dazed by the circumstances, speedy and drowsy at once. My legs were heavy, as though I'd been trudging through sand, and I was thirsty for fresh air. I wanted to run out into the cool January evening. I wanted it to rain, though I knew.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?